Oh my God, you guys, did you totally see the new art for Kamal? Oh my God, he is like so chill.
Really? Well, yeah. Now you know who I like the bangs on? Oh, I love Jareth. Jareth was so awesome. He had such nice six packs, everything.
Oh my God, and he's like a little kitty. I love kitties.
I love kitties
Meow.
too. Oh yeah.
Oh my God, did you see that outfit on Jaya? Oh, it's like totally ripped and it's like totally fashionable. I've got to get one for myself.
I don't know. I think it makes her hips look a little big, you know. I just can't see you in that, Chewie. I just can't.
I
I
think it
just
would
can't.
make your hips look big.
I think you're thinking of Joria. I think that would look great on you.
Oh my God, it's like totally boxy. It looks like something my mom would wear. As if.
Well, fine then.
That is so 20 minutes ago.
Ugh.
Well, you know what they all need to do? They all need to eat some crackers so that they all can fit into their size 2 dresses.
No, Dirk, darling. You can't be on a magic card and be female unless you're a size 0 and have fake boobs. It just doesn't work any other
Duh.
way.
Remember the Elvish Ranger? Hello. Hello again, and welcome to the Mana Pool. This is episode 110 of the Mana Pool, and I am always the Chewie. Except for that one time when I wasn't the Chewie. You guys remember that time I wasn't the Chewie?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Weren't you a vampire?
Wait, that wasn't me.
He glitters.
I do not.
Oh, that's right.
God. I still don't know what people are talking about since I haven't seen Twilight and have no intention of it.
Should I explain it in about 2 words or less? I can't
Vampire
in 2 words
Chinese.
or less, but can I explain it in 30 seconds or less?
No, perfectly not.
All right. That's
Did you
it's
see
probably better.
Twilight?
It's probably better that way.
He's read the books and seen the movies.
Oh no, I haven't read the books, but I did see the first movie. I haven't seen the second one yet.
Damn it, Brian. I am revoking your man card. Turn it in.
Other men have seen it.
Did your woman drag you, or do you like, oh my God, I want to see Twilight?
Kind of like, oh my God.
That's
OMG.
why you wanted to do the intro like that. Anyway.
I don't know
Everything
about
is now so clear.
And he watches the OC. Anyway, yeah, I'm the Chewie, and with me as always are some dorks. I've got Brian and Dirk this time around. We had a scheduling conflict, as always, here lately because everyone has freaking real life and real life sucks. But we either could have had yet another Dirkless show, or we could have a Mikeless show. So we went with a Dirkless, I mean with the Mikeless show, because we've had far too many Dirkless shows.
Yeah. We had a match last night and we lost that one. But what was even worse is that one of our wrestlers was dehydrated, so the EMS had to show up and haul him off.
Oh.
Yeah. He came off the mat, he was dry. Like usually when you run upstairs you build up a nice sweat. This guy went 6 whole minutes, 6 straight minutes, didn't shed a single bead of sweat.
Holy crap.
Did he win?
No, yeah, he won.
What?
He won. And then he came off the mat and pretty much like cramped up and was ready to die. Or felt like he wanted to die. 'Cause he felt that bad.
You wrestling coaches are just evil with the spit cup and all that.
I didn't do a thing. I didn't tell him a thing. I don't. I have
There's
since.
like, I just work here.
I just work here. Since I tell them that they should eat a healthy diet, and I tell them, you know, stuff that they should eat, but by no means do I like, you're what this? Oh, you can lose another 3 pounds. No. Long past that point in my life. I wouldn't make anyone else do that.
Fair enough. So that had nothing to do with magic, and that's exactly how we like it. We are brought to you, as always, by CardShark.com, a better way to buy and sell collectible card games. You should totally go to CardShark.com and check out the prices for the cards you want. I guarantee you they're cheaper than Star City. By far. Woot, in most woot. Cases. Woot, woot. What else? What else? What else? I also like to thank MTG Cast. I always forget about them, but they they don't host our show. We host our show, and they just link to our site. But they put our show on the MTG Cast network so we'll get out to more people. And I very rarely say this because, like I said, I forget. But I really appreciate what they do, Chris Otwell and Tom and all those guys handling all that. So, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. We appreciate it. Don't we, guys?
We do.
Yep.
I think that is well worth saying.
Yes. Oh, man, I've been listening to I actually haven't been listening to it the last about week. Limited Resources. I really like those guys. They're good.
I've seen their stuff, but I really haven't taken a chance to listen to the podcast. And I'm all about Limited, so I've been meaning to. But we're recording this the day after my last final. So most of the things I've been meaning to do have been on hold. And hopefully the next couple of weeks I'll have a chance to try out some things, new experimental things.
Now, he didn't mean that redundantly, not like his last final or his final last. It's his last final exam, just in case anybody's like, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Law school is a large pain when it comes to, you know, time management.
Yes, that it is.
Right then. So, new people. Yes, we have, you know what? I looked over Facebook and all that, but I didn't pull up the email. Hey, dummy. Let's see. We have new people on Facebook. No, we don't. Never mind. Michael Henry, though, posted on our wall on the Facebook group. And check this out. He says, and I quote, "I'm a recent convert to your podcast, and I have to say I have a bone to pick with all of you. I listen to 8 to 10 different podcasts every week, all of them under an hour. I stumbled on your podcast, the 3-hour episode, 107, I think, which – was that 107, guys?
That was 107.
More than likely.
Yes.
Yeah, with our crossover with the Avant-Garde show. I laughed hysterically the whole time and realized that I was going to have – to go back and listen to the rest of your shows as well. I now have listened to 3 shows in their entirety and have realized I'm going to be hard-pressed to find time to listen to the rest of my podcasts because I'm hooked on your show. So thank you very much for making me listen to your horrifically funny show for the ungodly length of time of around 2 hours per show. Jerks. Seriously, great show. I'm thoroughly enjoying myself. Keep it up. So... so thank you for the backhanded comment from Michael Henry. Glad you're enjoying the show. Somebody, I think it was an email, said they listened to the first couple and they weren't so bad. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I can't remember where I heard that, but.
And as with everything, we have a disclaimer for the first, was it 10, 20, however many it is. We're like, you know, just if you listen to them, just realize that they were pilots. We were trying to not figure out. We were trying to get our sea legs under us.
Not that many. We had it, you know. We had figured out by 10 or so. I think it's really just the first 3 or 4 or 5 that were kind of. Yeah.
What was the? It was one email that I read, and it's probably an older email and everything. But the guy was listening to the podcast in class or something, and he got kicked out of class because he busted out hysterically laughing at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a recent one.
So let's keep going.
Like, yeah, that sounds like some of my kids in class, except that they don't bust out laughing in the middle of class.
And if they do, Mike's like, you're out. So, okay, what else we got here? On the forums, we've got Hawkatex and Sandwich Dan. Sandwich Dan, who is apparently a Snorlax. Just saying.
Snorlax is a very high attack. Wait, I don't know what I'm talking about. Please continue.
Snorlax takes up the whole freaking screen when you throw the Pokeball.
Oh, that's yes, Smash where Brothers. From. I'm like, Snorlax, that sounds so familiar. What is that from?
Well, he's a
man,
Pokemon.
Sleeping in the road, getting in my way.
Wow, have you played Pokemon?
A long time ago.
I did not know that.
Long
You're
time.
Such a dork. Anyway, Tosis sent us an email. And he points out that he also misses the avant-garde show. And I have no idea what he's talking about here. He said he loved the random shout-out in the middle of the 45-minute long final thoughts. Oh, to him, I guess. Yeah. He also says he wants to come play Magic with us. Or at least record an episode, but I bet you get that a lot. You know, he's right. Everybody's offering to record episodes with us. If you ever need a guest host, man, I'm right here. Thank you.
Ever since we started, people have been...
Especially after we had our first guest host. Everybody's like, oh my god, I could do that. And we really do appreciate it, you guys. Just be warned that chances are if you say that, I'm probably going to ignore you for a while. Just saying. We try to keep the guest hosting to a minimum,
fairly
you know,
minimal,
when it's...
Yeah.
When it's necessary or when
for a while there,
there's a special occasion.
We were using people quite frequently, especially on preview episodes. But again, it's still pretty on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? What else? What else? Oh, and he did say we should not record any more episodes, but put episode 107 up on the feed every week.
People liked 107 a lot.
Dude, 107 was so ridiculously awesome.
Was that the one with the one hour final thoughts?
Yes.
Yes, it was. But anyway, that was Tosis, who is the host of Der Geek podcast. Let's see here. Johnny Kane asked us a question that we should answer, but not right now because I haven't thought about it. So let's skip him. I'll leave him starred. Andy Yan, who I think he's listening to our backlog, said Shred Memory made him laugh so hard he got banned from class just by laughing at some really bad moment. And then he said Reichskristallnacht, if you want to know. And not speaking German, I have no idea what he's talking about. That, and I don't remember much about the Shred Memory episode because I've tried to block it. The November pogrom in 1938. What? I'm looking it up in Crystal Night or Night of the Broken Glass was anti-Jewish pogrom in Nazi Germany and Austria. What?
Yeah, that's when the Nazis went around and destroyed all of the Jewish shops and tried to chase them out.
But I don't understand. I guess if I'd listened to episode,
if you remember,
to the Shred Memory episode again, I would probably go, "Oh my god!" Because I'm sure we did some
but
sort
where
of something.
Where is it? And listening to that episode will, in fact, ruin
break
your
brain.
Mind.
Yeah. Anyway, oh, and he offered to Mike to get humility out of his binder forever. And Mike emailed him back, no, humility was one of the ones that I believe needs to stay out of circulation entirely because of all the problems it causes. Seriously, it's for your own good. And he enjoyed the trading episode, which, thank you very much. What else, what else, what else? Dave. Alabama Dave. Oh, my God. This is freaking ridiculous. He sent me a cell phone video that he took while playing Two-Headed Giant on Duels of the Planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, I'm going to play it real quick. You guys haven't seen it, but I was hoping you'd see it before this. Tezzeret the Seeker and Tezzeret the Seeker, you know, the final before the update was two Tezzerets and Two-Headed Giant. Tezzeret and Tezzeret are at 24 life. And he hits play, and he's like, come on, come on, come on. I've only got 30 seconds on this phone. And just before it ends, Tezzeret's life total jumps to, are you ready for this, from 24 to negative 14,915. Huh. It's like 24, blam, minus 14,915. And I was like, and then you hear him cackling maniacally in the background.
Very nice.
And he said he keeps He keeps trying to beat that score, but he keeps locking up his Xbox. And I asked him how he did that, and he said co-op mode versus Tezzeret and Tezzeret using two Nisses with four coat of arms out.
Ah, that'll do it.
He said, save your Essence Drains for Glaze Fiends and your Eyeblights for Sharding Sphinx or Masticore until you can drop a coat of arms. Once the coat is on the table and you've got a few elves out, you can start sending just enough attackers to equal his blockers so he has no creatures. And then you just draw, make tokens, and go until good old Tez is about to deck himself before smashing him. He said all of his elves on this first run were about 178, 178. They had so many elves out that the game stopped giving them tokens when they tried to make them with the Imperius Perfect.
I can imagine the game sitting there was like, just finish it. Why are you stopping? That's like some of our old games in college. Like, what are you doing? Just kill him. And AJ's going, go. And then everyone gives that same response.
That is the response of choice. But that was from Alabama Dave. Thank you very much. That gave me quite a chuckle. It was ridiculous. I almost peed. Now, I got an email from Katie Woolsey. Woolsey? Woolsey? Who said her boyfriend had a question. If you lay multiple Eldrazi monuments, do they in effect protect each other? And I looked it up, and they said creatures.
So
unless you make each Eldrazi monument a creature, no.
Although she did immediately. I got an email back immediately saying that she withdrew that. So
yeah, mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that they figured that out.
But she sent another email.
But she did send another email that said, hang on, I lost it. Archive that one, this one here. I actually opened a pack to find a Baneslayer Angel. That is living the dream. And to her I say, because I still don't have one. Oh my gosh. And I'm fairly certain there are other ways to live the dream that I may or may not have been talking about, but I won't go into that. So, congratulations to Katie for getting a Baneslayer Angel. And again, I still don't have one. You guys have one?
No.
Nope.
Man, we suck.
Eh.
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 Man.
They are great.
Do we have any other emails? La 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 la. Nope, just Johnny's question, which we'll try to do that in the next episode or two. Oh, and we had comments on the MTGcast page. Andrew Sinclair on episode 108, the trading episode, said, based on what you eat, Brian wins.
Yes.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
It was the intro. It was the intro for episode 108.
What was that?
We just
the food. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. Brian did win. And then Omnisron. I cannot pronounce that. I'm so sorry. Said, I really like the main topic of the episode. It turns out that any subject can be interesting if you sprinkle in enough personal anecdotes. And that is how we roll. Implying that he also didn't care about the topic until he listened to it. So thank you very much for those comments there. Dirk.
Yes.
Best pickup line ever. What is it?
Hey, does this rag smell like chloroform?
That's how Dirk met his wife. Well, I thought it was funny.
And then, of course, you have all those old cheesy pickup lines like, are your pants see-through? Because I can see myself in them.
Lord. That is not how Dirk met his wife. That's a lie. He actually pulled the, are you tired because you've been running through my mind all day, and she punched him.
And then we fell in love.
And then, exactly, it was love at first contact.
And she beats me every night since.
And he loves it.
The Manapool does not endorse or condone domestic violence and recognizes that domestic violence is a problem in however many homes.
Including Dirks.
Amen.
No, he didn't say it was a problem. Anyway, let's get off of this subject here, for God's sake. this week, what we have here is a request from... Oh, I closed it. What a stupid face. I know. I think it was Sundershriek on the forums, wasn't it? Oh, look, and now Mozilla Firefox doesn't want to open. Here we go. Open up the Gmail, the Gmail, the Gmail. What, the Gmail? Right, stop that. Okay, here we go. Have you ever done a card of the set segment where you all name your pick for the best / favorite / most iconic / personally satisfying / whatever card from each release? I'd like to hear picks going back at least to Mirrodin. Recent sets would be especially interesting as I hear you enthuse about cards when they're new. Huh. But I don't usually hear long-term love for any particular. Seems like long-term love, he would mean less recent sets. But anyway... And that was from Sundershriek on the forums. And I thought that was a damn fine idea. So, I was reading that straight from the email I sent to the guys. Hey, here's what we're doing. Do this. And even though Mike is not joining us, Mike actually sent us his too. Because Mike is made of win and awesome. So, wait, did we miss anything?
Nope.
TheManaPool@cardshark.com. That's how you email us. Everything else is in the show notes. Now, so I thought we would just, since there's four of us, since Mike sent us his picks, there's four of us, and I'm sure we'll all have different ones. So let's just do the first three blocks when we all started playing together. So we're doing Onslaught block, which is Onslaught, Legions, and Scourge. Mirrodin block, Mirrodin, Darksteel, and Fifth Dawn, and if we have time, Kamigawa block, which is Champions of Kamigawa, Betrayers of Kamigawa, Saviors of Kamigawa. I'm detecting a pattern in Kamigawa block.
Very good.
Yes.
Cool, I didn't. Nothing.
Heart at Dirk. Now, less than three Dirk. That's a hard
negative 9,000.
Oh my god! So let's just jump right in. We're gonna pick one card that we think represents each of these sets, these nine sets.
Not five.
Not five. There's nine sets. There's four of us. That's 36 cards. That should be well over an episode. So
as the lead rambler, I made sure, and it was brought to my attention that this was gonna be one card per set.
I was like, Brian, one.
So,
just one.
So for that, I'm going first. So first we have Onslaught, correct?
Yes.
Pick for card that I felt best expressed Onslaught was Ixidor, Reality Sculptor.
I would not have guessed that in 100 years.
I like him. I also, one of our friends, Corey, who we talk about quite frequently, was a big fan. He built a deck that was purely based around Morph and getting out this guy and getting out Dream Sculptor and then just like, what do you think these things are? And it was kind of cool, but also.
What you mean, Dream Chisel?
Dream Chisel. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But he's one of the iconic legends of the set. So much of the story revolves around him. The morph mechanic flavor-wise revolves around him. Mechanic.
Tell us real quick what Ixidor does.
Ixidor as the card, he costs 5. Yeah. He is a 3/3, I believe. And I am quickly making sure. And this is filler. So no one can tell that I am loading. Okay. All right, he costs 3.
he costs
3 and 2 blue. He's actually a 3/4, which is a little better than I thought for a blue card. He's a legendary wizard. Face down creatures get +1/+1. Wow, it's not just yours. And for 2 and a blue, you can turn target face down creature face up. So he like I said, flavor-wise, so much of the set revolves around him. He interacts well with the main mechanic of the set by giving it a boost, not only and allowing you to kind of utilize the I'm going to play all these morph guys in my deck, even though I'm only running blue, but I can also have green and black and whatever morph guys. And he's a decent body, so I like him. I think he represents the set well.
Word.
Okay. So Chewy.
Oh, no, go ahead, Dirk.
Oh. I know most the guys probably think that I'm going to go with elves, but actually my pick would be Cryptic Gateway.
Uh-huh.
Artifact. And the reason why I would choose it is because the big thing about this set was creature types. And this, the card, Cryptic Gateway, if you have two cards that share the same creature type, if you, as long as Cryptic Gateway is out, if you tap both of them, you can put a card into play from your hand that shares the same creature type as those two cards that were tapped. So, essentially, you can, if you're running beasts, the Cryptic Gateway will throw an army of beasts out, as long as you've got the creatures to do it.
Yeah, which is what he uses it for.
Yeah.
To great effect, mind you.
Yeah, I built a beast deck around this whenever I first got into this and everything, and my beast deck, whenever the Cryptic Gateway came out, people panicked. And people started peeing their pants and being like,
Wirewood Savage.
Kill him now.
Yeah, with Wirewood Savage, he'll tap two beasts, he'll lay down a beast, and then he draws a card. And then he taps two beasts and lays down a beast and draws a card. And he taps two, that one and another one, and lays down a beast and draws a card. And we're like, come on. And he does doing all this at the end of Brian's turn. And we're like, son of a whore.
The best part was it Brian or someone had like some creature out, and I dealt them over, what was it, 300 damage? Like straight to someone's face from all
the beasts. That probably sounds about right.
I dealt someone 300 damage. They didn't die, unfortunately, because I think they had the Platinum Angel out. But they took well over 100 damage from my beast deck.
Like from a swinging?
From a swing.
Wow.
Because I had dropped almost every beast in my deck out.
Word? All because of Cryptic Gateway. So, let me do Mike's real quick, because this was also unexpected. I like the way that we all came up with different things here. Mike said Biorhythm.
Yeah.
This is what the whole set and the whole block is about. Creatures and big effects. And Biorhythm for what, 5 and 2 green? Is that right?
Sounds right. Sounds close.
I think it's 7.
Brian,
are you still with us?
I believe it's 8. Sorry.
Is it 8?
Bio.
For some reason, I keep closing Firefox, apparently because I'm an idiot.
Biorhythm actually costs 8. 6 and 2 green.
So it's 6 and 2 green.
I've run Biorhythm in quite a few of my decks, and I was like, I don't think it's 7. I think it's a little harder to get to.
I've only been there to be killed.
So tell us what it does then, Mr. Guy, who has it open.
Oh, I see how it is. Okay, well, for 6 and 2 green, it's a sorcery. Each player's life total becomes the number of creatures he or she controls. And if Mike was here as the rules guru, he would tell you that if the number of creatures you controlled is higher than your current life total, it actually counts as life gain for life gain effects.
Right.
Little tidbit.
Anyway.
So basically, everybody's life total becomes number of creatures they have.
Right. And so, yeah, that's all about creatures, and that's a huge effect, so Mike likes it. I had several possibilities. Now, real quick, Onslaught, what it was known for was the tribal thing. It was the first real tribal set that really focused on it. Cycling, morph, it had the fetch lands originally. The ones, the nameless one, the doubtless one, all that, the various creature lords, the tap lords, you know, tap X number of these guys to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I took all this into account when trying to find something to represent the set. Like, my first knee-jerk thought was well-wisher, and I thought, no, I'll kill myself if I say well-wisher. And what I came up with, actually I'm surprised Brian didn't pick, was Patriarch's Bidding.
Yep, that was a good one.
Because Patriarch's Bidding, again, sort of like the Cryptic Gateway, is exactly what the set was about.
So whenever you play it, you name a creature type, and everyone who plays, so if it's just two people, both players choose a creature type, and whenever creature type was chosen, all creatures of the chosen types return to play from the graveyard.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I was just going to read the card. So yeah, back in the tribal block, this was just stupid.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, the guy playing zombies would say zombies. The guy playing goblins would say goblins. Dirk would say elves. I'd say beasts, you know. And they'd all come back in, and we'd all be back at, you know, a stare-off. But when you're not in a tribal, you know, the one guy not playing a tribal deck would just curse. Mike would go, well, I've got a soldier and a guy and a stupid fungus. Crap. You know? But, I mean, it's again, it's a big effect. It's all about tribal. Each player chooses a creature type. And this was actually very important in tournaments as well. So even better, it showcases just all of that. So yeah, I thought it was pretty ridiculously awesome, actually.
I like it, and I like the fact that it showed up, and that it's such a fun card, but it had such good application. It really was a hallmark of good design, I think.
What I think is funny about Patriarch's Bidding is that it's also a quick way to kill somebody to make them lose the game. Because I don't know if anyone chose this for the next set, but if you have Phage the Untouchable in your graveyard and you pick her creature,
you just save the minion in the game.
Well, I guess we'll find out about Dark's prediction. Shall we keep moving?
All right, so that was Onslaught.
Onslaught.
Now, next up was Legions. Legions was known for being the all-creature set.
100% creatures. But they had creatures that worked like other spells, so it was interesting.
It was all creatures. It had Slivers came back. That was a big thing. And a few cycles, there were the Muses, the Gem Palm guys, and Dragons showed up in Legions again.
I never triple drafted Legions, but I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because I think that would be too weird even for me, and probably too annoying, because the guy who drafted Amplify would just be like, ah.
Timmy's would be happy though, because you wouldn't have to worry about, oh, well, destroy your creature. You wouldn't have to worry about like any sort of sorcery or instance to kill your creatures. It'd be straight up. My things beat your things.
Skin Thinner, Bane of the Living. There was definitely creature kill, but in the form of other creatures. So let's get into it. My pick, Krosan Cloud Scraper.
Oh,
that was on my list too.
Well, it's iconic. It's a 13-13, which at the time, not including unsets, never including unsets, was actually the largest creature in Magic, and may still be. I don't know that we've seen a 14-14.
I don't know. You keep telling us why, and I'll look it up.
And it had Morph, which is the mechanic for the block, and it was just so exemplified what Morph could do. Exalted Angel, all well and good. You know, won lots of tournaments, great card. But as far as like sheer, like, wow, this thing, 13-13. Come on. I don't think it had Trample. But,
no.
Which would have been,
it did have an upkeep cost. Didn't it have Morph?
It had Morph, yeah.
It had Morph and upkeep, yeah. Because it was 2/4 was its upkeep.
Right. At the beginning of your upkeep, pay green or sacrifice Krosan Cloud Scraper, but it was huge, and
it is still the biggest one. It was also reprinted in Time Spiral as a time shifted card.
That's right,
which I forgot about.
So still the biggest creature, and one of the things that they were steadily doing leading up to Scourge was more and more pushing this theme of bigger creatures and more like Mike talked about with Biorhythm, more expensive effects because they were also shifting away from a lot of the predominant control strategies in 8th edition, which was released after Scourge. No more counterspell, not counterspell, the counterspell. And you start to see more of these effects becoming doable. And Kross and Cloudscraper is a good example of what they were trying to make possible, not just for casual players, but for more serious players as well. So I like it. I think it stands out for the set well. Next.
Just real quick, I did a search for creatures with power greater than 10. I got Darksteel Colossus, Denizen of the Deep, Polar Kraken, Jokul Mortar, Phyrexian Dreadnought, and Kross and Cloudscraper.
Short list.
Yeah, well, I also got the BFM, but I don't count him because he's dumb. Anyway, so next.
I guess that'd be me then.
Yeah.
Well, mine is actually a hard choice. If I really were to go with it, I would have to say the Killmouth Dragon.
I was hoping you would.
Yeah, the Killmouth Dragon, was it Amplify?
Yep.
There was an ability that they had, and Amplify was you play the creature down and you'll reveal your hand, and you put, depending on how many creatures you have of the type, then you would put amplify counters equal to the or like if it was amplify of 2, you would put 2 counters on equal to the number of,
well, 2 counters for each card you revealed.
There you go.
Yeah, and that shared the type with it, which were the only ones you could reveal.
Yeah,
and so yeah. Now the dragon had amplify of what, Dirk?
3, which was the highest amplify you could have.
That's stupid.
And the best part about Killmouth was, it was one that you could. It spits. It has direct damage.
Yeah, it's a 5/5 flyer for 7, 5/2 red, and it's got amplify 3. So if you show 1 dragon, then you've got an 8/8 flyer for 3. Okay, that's still fair. I mean, that's already ridiculous. But of course, Dirk's dragon deck is full of dragons, so it's bigger than that. And it says tap. Killmouth Dragon deals damage equal to the number of +1/+1 counters on it to target creature or player. Now, when Dirk's got 9 counters on it, or 12, which it's usually one of those two, all of a sudden, the game becomes quick kill the dragon, or quick make sure Dirk doesn't look at you. Because it's creature or player, so Dirk could go, huh, you're going to take 12 now. And you're like, oh, I took 12. And Dirk's like, hey, I'm on tap now. We're like, damn it.
Yeah, I always joked, you know, about the Killmouth, you know, spitting at somebody and then their skin being seared off their face.
And you weren't that far off, my friend.
So, the Killmouth Dragon was definitely a fun, and it also had one of the mechanics, which was Amplify.
Of course. Now, which again shows
the tribal
nature of the block.
And Killmouth with Amplify 3 had the highest Amplify, so it was really, man, that thing is such a beating.
Yeah, it's bad. If no one's holding a terror, then it's just over. Excuse me. Now, next we have, Mike. Mike's first pick here, he sent me several just in case somebody,
picked his.
Yeah, picked his. His first pick is actually not something you would think. It's Echo Tracer. And Echo Tracer.
That's cool.
I feel us all going together being like, Echo Tracer.
No, I remember Echo Tracer.
I just wanted to be sure I got the stats right. Echo Tracer, for 2 and a blue, is a 2/2 wizard. It's now a human wizard. So it has morph, so that means you can play it face down as a 2/2 creature for 3 colorless mana. It has a morph cost of 2 and a blue, which is the same as its casting cost. When Echo Tracer is turned face up, return target creature to its owner's hand. This was one of the spells in creature form. Lots of the creatures with morph in Legions had the when it's turned face up, here's a spell.
Yeah.
And because there were no spells, you know, they needed a way to have spells. And actually, if I was going to pick one of these, I would have picked Willbender. But that's only because it's Willbender and it's freaking awesome. But Mike went with the Echo Tracer, which is the blue, I guess, unsummon in the set.
Yeah. And each color had one or two each, didn't they? They had was a cycle for common, uncommon?
I think there were just whatever spells they needed in the set. Like Skin Thinner was the Terror.
And then there was I remember the red one was, wasn't it direct damage or something?
Yeah, there were several. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one, I mean, it's a 2-2 for 2 and a blue, or you can play it face down, and later it's a 2-2 for 2 and a blue with a boomerang attached. Not a boomerang, an unsummon attached. So either way, I mean, it was still good. Nice and standard and pretty awesome. Nobody would ever see it coming for some reason. Anything to add?
Mm-mm. Not really.
Fair enough. Now mine, you thought I was going to say Akroma, didn't you?
We didn't know.
Yeah. I thought he would. Well, it's big and iconic and whatever.
It's true.
But she's been a bit run into the ground lately.
It's true, and she has nothing to do with what the set was all about. What the set was all about was creature types. So, damn it, Mistform Ultimus.
Legendary Octopus.
Yeah, he's a mutant ninja turtle, and that is awesome. He's not a teenager because he's of legal drinking age, apparently. But the Mistform Ultimus has been screwing up trivia questions for ever since he came out. There's always the except for Mistform Ultimus that's just understood. Now it's except for Mistform Ultimus.
Down Mistform Ultimus. It really
now it's
is too bad.
Except
that
for Mistform Ultimus and all the changelings.
Yeah, it's really too bad they did changelings because, I mean, I'm not one of those people that is so. There were people that when they did changelings, they're like, but Mistform Ultimus. I'm like, you know, I think it's okay. I don't think we need to look out for Mistform Ultimus. But I still think it's important for what he represented at the time.
Oh, yeah. He's 3 and a blue for a 3-3 legendary creature illusion. And it says, Mistform Ultimus is every creature type. Reminder text, even if this card isn't on the battlefield. So if you said search through your deck for an elf card, for some reason you wanted to, you could go get Mistform Ultimus. If he was in the graveyard and it said return target zombie to the top of your library, you could get Mistform Ultimus. So when a beast comes into play, Mistform Ultimus. I mean, yeah. And now, you know, it's old hat because of the changelings. But before the changelings, he was the only one that did all that. Mistform Ultimus plus tribal golem was just stupid. I actually had a deck that had both of those in it. Tribal Golem was a 4-4 for 6. He had Trample, Haste, First Strike, Flying, and Pay a Black to Regenerate with Mistform Ultimus in play. That's pretty awesome for 6 colorless mana, let me just tell you. But yeah, I just thought he summed up the set a lot more for me than Akroma did, just from a, you know, the set standpoint. I went with what sums up the set from, you know, what was in the set rather than how I felt about it. That was just me, though. So, yeah. I guess next.
Saviors. Not Saviors.
No.
Scourge.
The hey, dummy.
Scourge was, hey, look, we got dragons, and we've got mutants, and the Mari's going out of control, and everything's just freaking huge. So my pick for Scourge is...
Wait a minute. Scourge, I wrote down a list of some of the big important things that were in the set.
Not
we
much.
Had the War Chiefs.
Yeah.
Were in Scourge. Everyone knows them from the Goblin War Chief, who, you know, caused all kinds of hell. The Decrees. The only one that really mattered was the Decree of whatever the white one was.
Degree of Justice.
Yeah, there we go. The Land Cyclers, or Land Cycling, first showed up in Scourge. The Mana Cost Matters stupid thing, and Storm first made its appearance in Scourge. All of which are fairly important, except really for the decrees, which aren't important anymore. But anyway, keep going, sir. Sorry to break you off there.
No, that's all right. My pick is Day of the Dragons.
Really?
Yeah. Because
interesting.
They made a big point of emphasizing dragons. And I, you know, personally, not that this matters to anything, but I kind of saw it coming, and I was talking about it with Mike beforehand, and I said, you know, the Imperial Hellkite doesn't make any sense all by itself, because it was a card in Legions that you could morph, and when it flipped up, you could search your library for a dragon. And then you have the Kilnmouth Dragon. I'm like, you know, the two of these together do not... You know, what are you going to do? Run four of each and woo. No. You know, they also said they were building up toward, you know, bigger creature types. What's a huge creature type? Dragons. Like, literally, they're huge. Each one is individually huge. So, Day of the Dragons is like, the dragons are here and they're going to munch on your face. And it's weird that it's blue, but it's more of a shape shifting sort of into dragons kind of thing. For 4 and 3 blue, it's an enchantment, it's a rare. When Day of the Dragons enters the battlefield, exile all creatures you control, then put that many 5/5 red dragon creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. When Day of the Dragons leaves the battlefield, sacrifice all dragons you control, then return the removed cards from exile to the battlefield under your control. Whew, that's a lot of text. I was doing that off the Card Shark page. That's not even the Oracle, although I hope that's pretty close. Basically, you take every creature you had, you throw them out. For each one you had, you get a dragon, and if Day of the Dragons should be bounced to your hand or get destroyed or whatever, you get the original creatures back, but you have to sacrifice all the dragons you control, including any other dragons you've played since then. And you can do all sorts of neat and nifty stuff with this. I saw a deck where a guy played walls, just walls, until he had out like a couple walls, and then he played Day of the Dragons. Trade him in for dragons. Sounds good to me.
It does.
It represents what the set was doing at the time. It represents how they were pushing the set. And, you know, it's hard to get a bigger effect than trading in all of your elves for dragons with flying, because they fly. Otherwise, they'd be worms.
And actually, while we're on it, Phil listened to our old News in a Binder Pull episode. News in a Binder Pull, 2 bits. And heard us talk about Day of the Dragons and built a deck around it. And he posted it in the Pimp My Deck Box thread, and it's pretty awesome, actually. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. Really, what he does is he turns his mana creatures and mole drifters and whatnot into giant dragons and laughs. Anyway.
So that's pretty much all I had to say about that. Dark?
All right. I will point out one thing with this set, and that was it was very hard to pick a card.
Because there were so many or because there were so few?
Because this set, to me, was just all over the place. Like, it just
really
seemed like
was.
It was very chaotic. The one thing I did like was that the Mirari had gone awry, and so, like, the elves, for example, started to take on tree features. Like, they actually started looking, like, barkish. But if
like
I had
woof,
to...
Woof. No, sorry.
The one that I actually enjoyed, though, would be the War Chiefs, but one card in particular that I think I enjoyed the most is Twisted Abomination. It was one
All
of
right.
the... It was
nice.
The Land Cycler. That was the one that I actually...
It's a decent body, too.
Yeah, it's a 5/3 regenerator for 5 and a black.
Mm-hmm. And it regenerates for a single black. Wise choice.
I actually, this is probably the card in Scourge that I played the most. Good lord, I threw two in like every black deck I owned at the time. I still have them in some. Because they're freaking awesome. It was time shifted too, actually.
It really, I mean, it was a very cool card.
Yeah, man. The one thing black really needed was some, maybe not acceleration, but definitely some help smoothing out your mana to get up to the big, scary black things. Nightmares, or being able to play a bigger Consumed Spirit, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Dirk went functional this time. Very nice. Hi, Kida. Just come right in.
And Kida.
And Kida. Kida just opened my door and was like, yo, what you doing? I'm like, nothing, girl. And she's out again. Bye. Okay. Okay, this... Oh, yeah, Mike. Mike. Scourge. Of course, Mike went, Dragonstorm. He says, this set took the big creatures, big effects theme to the extreme, just like this card. And this one was also time shifted. Are we?
Said it could all go in here, right?
Okay. Your mic.
Conversation.
Oh, I thought I had muted. I clicked mute, and then it wasn't muted anymore. I don't know why.
Hey, dummy.
Hey.
All right. Dragonstorm for 8 and a red. Sorcery. Search your library for a dragon permanent card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. You're like, wow, that's kind of stupid for 9 mana. Oh, it's got Storm, which means when you cast this spell, copy it for each spell cast before it this turn. So if someone goes, you know, Seething Song, Dragonstorm, you go get 3 dragons. Ow.
Mm-hmm.
This card was thought to be just a casual superstar. They're like, wow, it costs 9. No one's ever going to play this. This is a kitchen table only card.
The big Storm card at the time was...
Tendrils?
Well, Tendrils, but also...
Brain Freeze.
No, the blue rare one.
The blue rare. Oh, Mind's Desire.
Mind's Desire. That, you know, and continues to be a force and extended.
Of course.
Of course.
But...
It took Time Spiral.
No, Dragonstorm was around back in the day.
Yeah, but it was a bit more fringe.
Before Dragonstorm, it would... No, in Kamigawa, it would go get 4 Kakushos.
That's true.
And kill you. But nowadays...
Well, Dragonstorm and Kakusho were never in Standard at the same time.
Okay, then Extended. Excuse me.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm done correcting you.
Thank you. But yeah, you know, for 9 mana, this is dumb. No one's ever going to do this. And then people realized you could play Desperate Ritual and Seething Song... and all of that, and actually get up to the Dragonstorm faster and be able to go get a stack of dragons. So an extended Dragonstorm deck happened. Are you sure this didn't appear elsewhere?
Well, Garden Hellkite is what you're thinking of in Standard during Time Spiral. Because
I thought it was in Standard before that, though.
No, because around Affinity, around the time that Mirrodin came out and we got Seething Song, we also got Affinity. So not as much. But then Time Spiral came, and you could kill people instantly.
Yeah, and it showed up at, I think it was at Worlds?
I think so.
I think it was, where there was Dragonstorm showed up again when it was time-shifted, and you would go, you could hide it under the freaking Spine Rock Knoll, and hit somebody with a creature and some burn, and then Dragonstorm for freaking 4, go get 4 Begarden Hellkites, and kill them. Begarden Hellkite comes into play and deals 5 damage to a creature or player, divided as you choose, to 2 creatures or players, whatever, it doesn't matter. What matters is, it was a standard deck, and it was freaking nuts.
And even before Lorwyn came out, before you even had the Null Spine...
Spine Rock Null,
you know, just, again, like Chewie said... Usually how it started is suspending a Lotus Bloom on turn 1. If you saw someone suspend a Lotus Bloom or God help you 2 on turn 1, you're like, oh good, I have 3 turns before I get eaten by Dragonstorm. And then the Lotus's play, which count as spells, and you throw in a Seething Song, boom, you're there. In addition to whatever lands you have in play, so... And then Lorwyn came out and they're like, here's a hideaway land. And people are like, I know what to put under there. Chewie's mom.
Yes. But Chewie's mom does not fit in a deck really anywhere. Because really, she's too expensive. You think Dragonstorm's expensive? Ha! So yeah. But that was Dirk. That was Mike's choice for card of the set. For me, I had several actually that I couldn't choose between. But I think I'm going to stick with the main thrust of the set and go with the Ancient Ooze.
That's not a bad one.
It's really not. The Ancient Ooze for 5 and 2 green is an ooze, so Tom loves it. Its power and toughness are each equal to the total converted mana cost of other creatures you control. Which Scourge had this weird converted mana cost matters thing. I almost picked Scornful Egotist.
That was always Devin's favorite card. Devin, like, whenever, like, Scry would run a special on, like, the top 10 wizards from Onslaught Block, he's like, Scornful Egotist! I'm like, I don't think so, but I'll check.
It was a 1-1 that cost 8, but it had a morph cost of 1, and it's because the converted mana cost matters crap in the set.
Right.
But really, Scornful Egotist is just dumb. Ancient Ooze is like the payoff. So, especially in a Dirk deck, actually is what I meant to say. In a Dirk deck, the Ancient Ooze could get stupidly big pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he threw an ooze in his beast deck, then we'd all pee ourselves and try to kill it immediately.
And fail miserably. Unless you, of course, killed it.
Yeah, unless you succeeded. But yeah, like Mike keeps saying with his, big creatures, big effects, and this is a big creature that relies on your other creatures to get even bigger. Because if you play it out by itself, it's going to die. And I'm going to cough and die.
So, anyway. Chewie's going to do an impersonation of the Ancient Ooze.
That's pretty funny.
He already did it. If you blinked, you missed it.
So, yeah. So, that's Onslaught Block out of the way. And really, I don't miss it. Now that we're done with it.
Yeah. Then we had 8th edition, but I guess we're not going to go to that. So, now we... Although it is worth noting that they did make new card frames and set the magic world afire. And here we are years later, and it's still around. Ah ha ha.
And there are still people who hate the new card frames. Even though they're not the new card frames anymore, they've been around for, what, like 8 years now?
Yeah. Still some people are like, back in my day.
Yeah, I seem to remember in that last episode of the Magic Sock, Ron Vitale said something about... They did the new card frames, and I'm still not real thrilled about that. I was like, really? Really? That's like saying I still don't like the stack. Like, no.
I met people who still... moving right along.
That's just a rant.
After 8th edition...
Shut up. I was trying to work in the pause all smoothly, and Brian's like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, shut up.
Doing what I do.
It's true. That's why we have him here. So we don't have any, you know, dead airspace.
Dead space,
even though on the last episode, there's probably quite a bit. I don't know what happened last episode. I'm very sorry about that to everybody. All of us weren't quite with it, just to be honest with you. Anyway, so yeah, that is the Ancient Ooze. Next, Mirrodin. Right, so
moving on, Mirrodin. A world of artifice.
And failure.
And artifacts. And one of the biggest mechanics was, of course, affinity. And really, when done fairly, it was slightly unfair. But
it had a
bunch to break it.
It had a bunch of nifty stuff. There were the Slith... Mirrodin. Entwine showed up in Mirrodin. It's where equipment first came from, and nobody seems to remember that because of stupid affinity.
That's true. Mirrodin really did bring a lot to the table.
It really did. The spell bombs, which were so big in combo decks and still are, and all the nonsense with charge counters
I have to give a quick shout out here. If you play Magic Online during the holidays, I don't have the dates in front of me, but for a limited time only, even though you can't buy Mirrodin block boosters anymore, if you have 15 tickets, you can play in a Mirrodin block draft, Mirrodin Darksteel Fifth Dawn.
Wow.
All you have to provide is the tickets. I imagine that these will fill quickly. I don't think there's a limit. You know, they'll continue to fill as long as people fill them. But good opportunity. I really enjoyed – this is where I cut my teeth on drafting, and I think I did pretty well. Always draft green. But so
– He's not kidding. Always.
But so check it out, and especially if you've got the tickets to spare, I think you'll be – I think you'll have a good time. So as far as what we're talking about here today, my pick, Seat of the Synod.
Really?
Yes. Because Mirrodin had one other thing going for it. It had artifact lands. Lands that are artifacts. It sounds very simple in practice. And, you know, people are like, ooh, we've never really combined. This was about the time that Mark Rosewater was really like, hey, let's try and and Mark Gottlieb was also, I think, either involved in rules or was becoming the rules manager. And they were pushing the bounds a little bit more. And they said, let's see what we can't do with this here artifact theme. And while this card was later banned just for being too good, because as a land, it taps for mana. It accelerates your spells. As an artifact, it accelerated your affinity. So essentially,
it can tap for two, almost.
But thematically, I like what they did here. I like the fact that as an alternate land, it came in untapped and you could use it right away. The drawback was you can only have four in your deck. But I like what it represented. And even though later it was a big reason, without the artifact lands, Affinity wouldn't have been nearly as nuts. And even though I do have problems with Affinity, I do recognize what they were trying to do here. It was something unique to the game, and especially for players that didn't really break it. I think this can be a neat little card to use.
You know what's really sad?
What's that?
The only drawback that you mentioned was the rules of the game that you can only have four card of the one card in your deck. It's sad when that's the only drawback. That, and I guess, you know, Naturalize can kill it.
Yeah. I remember hearing about the early on in the previews for Mirrodin, they did the cycle of these. And I remember thinking, man, I don't know if I really want to play with these. Just for the Chewy, the reason that Chewy mentioned was I had already gotten burned a little bit from land destruction decks. Who hasn't, right? And I suddenly had images of like Naturalize, and I'm like, no! And then I realized later on through practice, there were other things that needed to be naturalized. So, I don't think – somebody somewhere might have gotten a little mana screwed out there with these, but generally I don't think that was the big problem. The big problem was that by the time they could naturalize it, you might have had a Frogmite out and working your way up toward a Mirror Enforcer or something like that. So that's my pick. Dirk, what is your pick?
I kind of went with the Affinity thing also. Okay. And there were a lot of choices, like just – a few to throw out. Sword of Kaldra, Platinum Angel, Chrome Mox was one in this set. But Broodstar, I think, was the one for me that kind of goes with the whole Affinity thing. Because I remember...
See, if you hadn't picked Broodstar was definitely on my list. But I knew somebody else would pick it. So
Broodstar, and the whole thing was the thing I remember most about...
What a miss!
Dirk's pick is Broodstar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
But it was just that the one thing I remember was, like, if you were not playing an Affinity deck, you did not win Friday Night Magic. Period.
Yeah, this is back when every once in a while we'd actually try to go to Friday Night Magic.
And we would have, like, our Type 2 decks, we'd show up, and none of us would win. Except for, I think, Brian or Corey... Because they built an Affinity deck.
I went to Friday Night Magic much more than I do now. At the beginning of the year, I made a New Year's resolution to go at least once a month or so, and I have not met that. Whew. I've just been too busy.
Because New Year's resolutions are there for you to break them. That's their whole point.
But I do recall I went to one Friday Night Magic, and I brought Affinity, and I won. And then purposely for the next one, I brought an Underworld Dreams deck just to be a little more off the wall. And I think I won that one, too. And some of the players that I saw were like, I remember you from last time. And one guy was so upset by my Affinity deck, he built a deck to beat it. And he was really disappointed when I played no artifacts. He's like, sorry. Here, draw 10. Die. But yeah, Broodstar. Broodstar are cool. I remember going to States that year. It was right after Mirrodin was released. It was the first time I had ever been to a state championship tournament. And August was there, another player, and he's like, what are you running? And I was running some sort of offbeat kitchen table sort of homebrew, but rogue. And the best thing he had to say about it was off the radar. I'm like, yeah. And then he showed me his Affinity deck, and I'm like, do you really think Affinity's that great? I mean, they made a theme deck around it. No offense, but the Wizards theme decks are usually not, like, that great. And then we played a couple of games, and I was always dead on turn four. It was all on the back of Broodstar. So that kind of colored my perception of it.
Did we already tell people what it did?
I don't think Dark actually said.
I don't think we did.
It is 8/2 blue for a flying beast. It has power toughness equal to the number of artifacts you control, and it has affinity for artifacts. So the least it could cost is 2 blue. And by then it's an 8/8 or larger.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian was convinced that this was going to be it. You know,
yeah.
Until the next set.
I had good reason for that, because Affinity was strong long before we got to Darksteel. Mm-hmm. There's already a question of, can Affinity get better? The answer was, yes, it can. But we'll get back to that in a bit.
Yeah. And really, I think the Broodstar didn't make it because of the Goblin Pile Driver, really. That's one of the reasons it didn't make it anyway. But anyway, Mike's choice is, much like the Broodstar, is Frogmite, which is a seemingly innocent card that's just made amazingly powerful by, and I quote, the wrongness of Affinity. And the Frogmite is a simple 2/2 artifact for what, 4?
Mm-hmm.
That,
2/2 for 4.
Yeah. That has affinity for artifacts. Yeah. No one ever played 4 for a freaking Frogmite in the history of ever.
Mm-hmm.
If you paid 4 for a Frogmite, you did it as a goof. But
there was a multiplayer game that Corey hit me for like 5 almost right away. I'm like, why'd you do that? He's like, because you had a turn 1 Frogmite. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, Brian's a douche like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's very simple. It's a 2/2, but when you play a 2/2 for free, or, you know, sometimes you paid 1 for it, sometimes you got stuck and had to pay 2 for it, but playing a Frogmite for free means the next turn you're probably going to play a Mirror Enforcer for free. And that's never good. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Mine... You guys took all of mine. Oh, here we go. The other big thing, let me pull it up here to make sure I don't screw this up. Since it's all about artifacts, I didn't want to choose an artifact. I wanted to choose a card that worked with artifacts in some way. And I could have gone Shrapnel Blast or Isochron Scepter, you know, something like that. But instead... Disciple of the Vault. A simple little 1/1 for a single black, a human cleric, that got banned. Along with the rest of the Affinity deck. Whenever an artifact is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may have target opponent lose one life. This didn't actually get big until the next set, but all in all, it sums up how the artifact set worked. Everything in it had something to do with artifacts, essentially. Or the overwhelming majority of it, let's say, had something to do with artifacts. And this was a nice one. When somebody kills one of your artifacts, you can have them lose a life. When someone, you know, trades with your Frogmite, you can have them lose one life. You know, it's nifty. Your Shrapnel Blasts now deal 6. Hey, cool, you know. Anyway, so that is that.
Well, one thing I also like to point out is that one thing I had mentioned was the chrome mock. So imprinting was started in this.
Imprint started this one. Imprint was a cool mechanic. It was very easy to grasp how it worked and enabled some interesting stuff.
Yeah, the terrifying one was Icecrown Scepter. The Chrome Mox is still getting played in Extended. I finally listened to the Worlds coverage, and yeah, the Chrome Mox was still there.
Yeah, just throw it on and the name escapes me. City of Brass. And you don't have to actually pay, you won't get penalized for the life because it's not a City of Brass. It's the Chrome Mox can make any color.
You throw out a Wooburn 5 color card. That's about the only thing Corona the False God was good for.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, Darksteel.
Darksteel. Introduced Darksteel creatures and,
yes.
And artifacts. Literally, Darksteel and this introduced indestructibility, which had not indestructibility of the card, but indestructible.
Word. Yeah.
And it's not a mechanic, like they've said over and over again, it's just an English word.
Yeah.
It means can't be destroyed. Just basically, it might as well say, like, card name can't be blocked. They don't need to say, have a keyword for unblockable.
Yeah.
It also continued some of the other themes from Mirrodin, and we also saw Modular.
Modular mm-hmm. first showed up in Darksteel. We had the Echoing spells.
Yes, which are still – Echoing Truth is still a nasty, nasty card.
Oh, yeah. And that's still being played in Extended.
Yes.
The Pulses, not the Maelstrom one, but the various Pulses that return to your hand if some condition was met. And something I had forgotten about, the new free Lucky Charms that are everywhere in every freaking core set up in Darksteel.
Angel's Feather, etc. Before that, we had to make do with a Throne of Bone. It wasn't so uncommon to see Ivory Cup around. People are like, what's Ivory Cup? You don't want to know.
No.
Quick, spell High Cup.
So,
anyway.
my pick, you notice I haven't really done this with any of the others, but it just had to be the one. Arcbound Ravager.
Yeah, that was sort of a given.
It warped Standard and Extended for so long. It's for 2 colorless mana, it's technically a 0/0, but it enters the battlefield with 1/+1/+1 counter because it has modular 1, and I hit on this. Modular means it's modular and X, and this creature enters the battlefield with X+1/+1 counters. And then whenever this artifact creature dies, you can move the counters on it onto another artifact creature you control. So you're like, hey, great, you know, a bunch of little 1/1 dudes, one dies, well, one can become a 2/2, and, you know, they can keep feeding on each other. And Modular was an interesting little thing. This guy broke it simply by also having the ability to go at any time, sacrifice an artifact, put a +1/+1 counter on Arcbound Ravager. Well, now you have another Arcbound guy, let's say, and Arcbound Worker, who also has Modular 1 and costs 1, you sack the Arcbound Worker. First of all, his Modular places the +1/+1 counter, if you so choose, on the Ravager. But then the Ravager's own ability resolving puts another +1/+1 counter on it. So he grew. But also his combination with Disciple of the Vault that was already mentioned, the ability to sacrifice any or all of your artifacts at instant speed. And, oh, by the way, lest we forget, after a couple activations, this guy is huge/huge. And the games against Ravager were always short and always bittersweet. You could play all these other artifacts like Frogmite or whatever for free, for cheap. They fed him, and with Disciple of the Vault out, literally, like, even destroying their stuff was a losing proposition.
It's true.
And in case you can't tell, I'm not really a huge fan of this card, but it was so important to what it did to Standard. And honestly, even taking a step back, what it represents for the set, it's the best modular creature, even in a fair modular deck. It's the best modular creature because it enables so much other stuff. So I think it's a fair representation. Not fair, but I think it's a good representation.
Yes, you actually stole Mike's first choice too.
I'm sure. But in this set, there's a lot of good stuff in Darksteel, but you can't not talk about it.
What Mike said was that it added even more cards that R&D thought would be okay in power level terms, but which ultimately ruined the game for many people. Mm-hmm. Mike is fairly bitter about Affinity, apparently.
Mike, I got the impression, really just – he hated – Mirrodin was was one of those blocks that we were kind of excited about because we were so tired of creatures and all the stuff from Onslaught, and then Mirrodin made us all hate artifacts. I distinctly remember us all, by the end of Mirrodin block, going, thank goodness we don't have to put up with artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
For a while.
To be completely fair, I think, just as a side note, I think that happens at the end of a lot of sets. After Ravnica, I was like, okay, the kind of tired of the guild structure now. We can move away from guilds. Shards, you know, again, you know, okay, we can get away from these three color decks. And that's
I can't remember who it was. Somebody said, I was talking about... it might have been on the show, actually. I was talking about Shadowmoor going away and, you know, Shards being just after Shadowmoor. I was like, I'm glad we're getting back to Standard Magic. And somebody said, yeah, I really can't wait for colors to actually matter again.
Mm-hmm.
Because color in Shadowmoor didn't matter because you could have a freaking mono blue deck with a card with 5 white mana symbols in it. Come on now. Anyway. But I think – I don't want to speak for Mike really, but I think part of what he's feeling here is not so much the set itself. It was the spectacular failure of R&D to realize what the hell they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just that we were sick of artifacts. It's that everything was Affinity. Everything. They ended up having to ban the entire deck.
Yeah. And including the Artifact Lands and the Disciple.
The Lands, the Disciple of the Vault. Was the Ravager banned?
I don't remember. If they didn't ban it, they pretty much made it silly to run it. They had to take extreme measures. They banned 9 cards in Standard. They almost never ban anything in Standard to begin with.
Let's see. So it was the 6 lands. Because they banned the Darksteel one too, didn't they?
Right.
And the Ravager and the Disciple. So that's 8. What was the 9th one?
Maybe Chrome Mox? I can't recall. But I remember the number 9. Two other cards in Darksteel that were very questionable, but I'll wait and see if... I'm only going to mention them as a side note if nobody else mentions them. So let's keep going.
Fair enough. So that was Dirk's? No, that was yours.
Mm-hmm.
Dirk, what you got?
I could easily go with Darksteel Colossus, but instead I'm going to go with one that It was thrown into the block kind of as a counter to everything that was going on, and that was Pristine Angel. Because for me, it was such an artifact block that when they released Pristine Angel, it was just a way of fighting off all the artifacts, all the everything. Pristine Angel, as long as she is untapped, she is protection from everything, isn't it?
Protection from, I think it's all colors.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
I think so.
Pristine Angel. Flying for 4 and 2 white. She's a 4/4 flying angel. As long as she's untapped, it has protection from artifacts and from all colors. And whenever you cast a spell, you can untap her. So yeah, she's pretty ridiculous. She's insanely hard to kill.
Yes.
So in this whole set of artifacts and everything, she actually was a halfway decent defense mechanism against, well, she obviously is not going to stop a trample attack or anything like that, but, you know, she was probably the best defense you had against just any sort of random creature without trample.
That is a pretty good call there, Zerk. Well, let's see, Mike's. Mike's second pick was Aether Vial.
That was one of the two.
One of the two what?
One of the two that may have possibly been a mistake.
Let me check. Oh, yeah, it was also banned in Extended and Mirrored in Block. I forgot about that. I think the Aether Vial was banned at a different time, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Okay.
And for different reasons.
Yeah. The Aether... I guess I could pull the card back up. Aether Vial is an artifact. It costs 1. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a charge counter on Aether Vial. Tap. You may put a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on Aether Vial from your hand onto the battlefield. So every upkeep, you got a charge counter on the Aether Vial, which means on turn the second turn, you could throw out a creature that costs 1 for free, just by tapping the vial. On the third turn, you could throw out a creature that costs 2. Then 3, then 4. This is as high as you wanted to go. And with all the Aether, the charge counter manipulating nonsense, you could jump it up or down as you wanted, pretty simply. I mean, and even in Limited, this was stupid. Because, you know, if you had a lot of 3-drops in your deck, well, screw it. You just get it up to 3 and leave it there, and then you can throw out your 3-drops for free. Ah, ha, ha, ha. But it was a massively overpowered nonsense. It really doesn't sound so bad. But it was. Brian, why was it so bad?
Because even though it looks like it's being fair, like, oh, you know, you can only play this on turn 1, and then, you know, next turn on turn 2, when you're playing 2-drops, you can only possibly drop a 2-drop here, or a one drop even, so you're a turn behind, but it ignores all sorts of things, color requirements, it's reusable, it ignores the fact that you only need to get 2 counters, and it's already silly, because all you need to do, some of the best things you can drop are 2-drops, see Spell Snare later, there's only maybe 3, but you're not using this to build up. Maybe, you know, in a very sort of fun way, you're using this to build up to like 8 or 9 drops and just go wha-bam. But in a very sort of aggressive, more tournament-oriented deck, you're using this to drop ridiculous low-costing stuff very quickly and at instant speed. And you're not even playing the spell, the creature spell, so you're just sliding it right out there. Can't get around counters. Oh, man, what doesn't it do?
It is, in fact, a floor wax and a dessert topping.
But it does not make fries.
No, but it will tap to put a chef into play at instant speed to make the fries for you.
Hello, children.
I do a podcast with a bunch of silly people.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So what was your choice, Chewy?
Well, let's see here. Hang on. I guess I'll go with the Darksteel Colossus since everyone else took all the rest of mine.
Hey, it's still not. It's been upgraded to Mythic, so
that's
it's
true.
Iconic at the very least.
The Darksteel Colossus is an artifact creature. I think it's a golem now, isn't it?
Golem.
Probably.
No, not that. Oh my god. You know, it's too bad Scott's not here, or I could get him to do it. He does the golem thing, the golem noise, or voice, just great. It is a golem. But it's an 11-11 for 11. It's got trample, it's indestructible, and if it would be put into the graveyard from anywhere, you reveal it and shuffle it into the library, so you can't cheat it into play or reanimate it, anything like that.
Not that it mattered with tooth and nail.
Yeah, really. Not so much. But, I mean, it's the card from the set. It's huge. It's, like Brian said, it's iconic. It's an artifact. It's got the whole Darksteel indestructible thing. And it's, yeah, I mean. Oh, and it was reprinted in 10. Duh. I was like, where was it reprinted? It was reprinted somewhere just recently. Hey, dummy. But it's just, it is what sums up the set without getting into Ravager. Yeah, the other card you were talking about was Skullclamp, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember Skullclamp being banned.
You're it muted, was Skullclamp. How go. Did you know?
Because that's the other stupid card. But that wasn't the other one. That was banned at a different time, too, wasn't it?
It was. I believe Skullclamp was banned before Affinity. Because right away, they're like...
They're like, what have we done?
What have we done? The story here is kind of interesting. Just really briefly, it was not nearly as good in playtesting. And they kept trying to make it a little better. But it's kind of one of those things where everybody just remembered the old bad version of the card. And then somewhere along the line, after the set had gone to print, one of the guys was like, hey, this thing might be decent now. And they played a game, and all of our R&D was like gathering around watching. And there was kind of this silence. And then somebody said, I'm going to try that in my future League Ravager deck. And by then they're like, oh no. It's just so good for what it does. Even just in my white weenie deck, it was just like, blam. And it was never fair, so. I'm with Mike with this one. They pushed a lot of things on the power level, and I'm kind of glad that they were willing to take risks, but some of these went a little too far, guys.
Yeah, luckily they haven't had any spectacular failures like, all of these cards, you know, the freaking Affinity, the Aether Vial, Skullclamp. They haven't had this many failures all at once. Since, I guess because they were all, you know, threatened with their lives or something.
But this was probably the worst it had been since Urza's Block. Probably. At one point, you know, there's a story that I believe is true that literally during Urza's Block and during Combo Winter, all of R&D was called into somebody's office, some bigwig, and yelled at for, like, how could you let this happen?
Anyway, moving on, the last set in the Mirrodin block is Fifth Dawn. And Fifth Dawn sucked. Let's not even do it.
Why?
No, I'm just kidding. Fifth Dawn did suck, but yeah, let's do it anyway.
God, that set was horrible, in my opinion.
It really, man, it's not really terrible. It's just, it's hard to follow up stuff like Mirrodin and Darksteel. It really is. And they at that point, they're like, bring it back! Bring it back. We can still save Standard.
Except when they designed this, you know, they designed it a year ahead of time, so that wasn't it.
Okay, maybe I'm just trying to make excuses for them.
Yeah.
Honestly, Fifth Dawn was all about color mattering all of a sudden, and suddenly you wanted to play as many colors as you could. There was a mechanic called Sunburst that rewarded you for playing artifacts, but the more colors you played, you used to play that card. the better it would be.
Yeah.
And it was very strange for me to go from, like, having more freedom, like running a mono black deck and having lots of artifacts, to being, like, having to have these other colors. And I'm like, unlike Onslaught Block, there was no real sense that this was where the block was going.
Really? With Onslaught Block, the whole mana cost matters thing came out of left field, too.
I don't know. I felt, again, I kind of felt like they were going toward, if you look at how things were kind of escalating in Legions into Scourge, not so much in Onslaught. But here, no, like, literally nowhere. Just, like, color matters, and we're like, what? Why? You told us this was artifacts. You told us! So,
but card, also, there were the beacons.
The beacons, yeah.
Were in fifth dawn. The not bringers. Scry first showed up in fifth dawn.
The bringers were awesome.
The bringers were pretty awesome. And
Scry is one of the best mechanics ever. And I'm going to let Chewie talk.
And the stupid stations. Those Johnny-tastic combo pieces were in here, but we'll try to forget those. So, what have you got for Fifth Dawn, the Brian?
My pick for Fifth Dawn, the Brian, is Sun Crusher.
Yeah, I don't remember Sun Crusher.
Most people don't remember Sun Crusher, because honestly, it's just not that good. But it really exemplifies the extreme of Sunburst. Sun Crusher costs 9. All colors, because it's an artifact, and no, even during Mirrodin, we didn't see any of that silly Esper-colored artifact stuff that you kids are running around with these days. It's an artifact feature.
With your rock and roll music.
Your long hair and your... anyway, it's a rare, and it's a 3-3.
Your pants all hanging half off your butt.
It's a 3-3. It has Sunburst, so it actually comes into play with a +1/+1 counter on it for each color of mana spent to pay its cost. Excuse me. And so it could be as big as, without any of the additional tricks, an 8-8, which, you know, for a 9-9, okay. You can pay 4 and tap it and remove a +1/+1 counter from Sun Crusher to destroy target creature. No limitations on color or anything like that. And you can pay 2 and remove a +1/+1 counter from Sun Crusher to return Sun Crusher to its owner's hand. So the thought was, run them out there with a couple counters, blow up some stuff, and while you've still got a counter left on it, return it to your hand, replay it. The only stumbling block, it costs 9. And this isn't the guy you want to cheat out there with Cryptic Gateway or something. Not that he is a creature type, but like with Aether Vial on 9 counters or whatever.
He does now. He's a construct.
Oh, he's a construct. Okay, well, you don't want to do that. You don't want to cheat him out with Aether Vial, which has 9 counters on it for some reason, or any of that stuff, because you want to at least pay the 5 required to put him out there with the counters. Again, he's my pick because he represents the extreme of what Sunburst can do. And if you get him out there with a couple of counters, that's pretty big. The ability to just go, bam, you're dead. Bam, pay 2, don't even have to tap it to return to your hand. That's almost Blinking Spirit-like. So he's hard to kill, and he can be huge. And that, I think, is good for what it represents for the set. As far as a card, next, Dirk. Dirk.
Dirk, you're muted.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was muted. I was already in my thing. Okay. One thing that we had that I chose for this block, actually it was a continuation from the other two blocks. And that is Caldra. We did not mention the Sword of Caldra. The is the Armor of Caldra?
Shield.
The Shield of Caldra. And then this set, we had the Helm of Caldra, which when you play all three of them, Helm of Caldra allows you to put a, I think it's a 5-5.
4-4.
A 4/4?
Right, here, let's just read the card.
Yeah,
it costs 3. It's a legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature has first strike, trample, and haste. Wow, really? That's cool. It has equip of 2. Huh. And for a colorless mana, if you control an equipment named Helm of Cauldra, Sword of Cauldra, and Shield of Cauldra, you put a legendary 4/4 colorless avatar creature token named Cauldra onto the battlefield and attach those equipment to it. So really, Sword of Cauldra,
it gets
+5/+5, and whenever equipped creature deals damage to a creature, exile that creature. And the shield made it
indestructible.
And it also made the sword and shield and helm indestructible. So what you got was actually a 9/9, good lord, a 9/9 indestructible. When it deals damage to a creature, exile that creature with first strike, trample, and haste. Jesus.
So, I mean, I think, continued on with the theme that this was still an artifact-driven block. But at the same time, it was one of the few things that actually tied all three blocks together. Because really, in my opinion, Fifth Dawn was like the black sheep of the whole set.
That seems to happen in the old third blocks, or third sets of the block. I said the first set, the big set is good, the second set continues it, and the third set takes a left and goes over there. And you're like, what?
And then everyone's left going, what? Cool cards. Sometimes. But what?
What? What?
Yeah.
Huh. Helm of Cauldra. And actually, those three were the pre-release cards. The sword, the shield, and the helm. Which is pretty cool. Let's see. Mike. Brian, do you have anything to add about the Helm of Cauldra?
Not really.
Okay. Mike, for Fifth Dawn, said Fist of Suns.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty nifty card, actually. For 3 mana, it was an artifact that said you may pay Wooburg rather than pay the mana costs for spells that you cast. So that's Wooburg is white, blue, black, red, green, one of each color. And, it meant that you could, the glider, the flying sunburst creature had a converted mana cost of 3. So if you use 3 colors, the biggest it could ever get was a 3/3. Fist of Suns allowed you to play, get 5 counters on it. Aw, yeah. But because the whole Wooburg thing was big, there was the composite golem. All the bringers had Wooburg as an alternate cost. A big thing in the set was getting the ability to use all 5 colors of mana. And once with the Fist of Suns out, once you did that, you could play anything in your deck for just Wooburg. Which is pretty nifty. But what Mike said is, the set came out of left field with funky effects focused around Wooburg, but was ultimately pointless.
I would have to agree.
But it does sum up what the set does. All of a sudden in this artifact set, you can start using all 5 colors of mana, huh? What? So I decided to go with a card that actually, how do I put this? It enabled the whole Wooburg thing, the Joiner Adept. Which is, I don't remember what it costs. It costs 1 and a green. It was in 10th edition, cool. It costs 1 and a green, and it was an Elf Druid for a 2/1, and it said, land you control have, tap. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So suddenly, all of your lands became Birds of Paradise. Became free Cities of Brass. Yay! And in this artifact set, where artifacts were the big thing, all of a sudden we've got the whole sunburst thing, and it just looks completely ridiculous. And the Joiner Adept was the best way to enable that, so I went with the Joiner Adept. Because, I mean, Fifth Dawn was the sunburst set, is how people remember it. That, or they remember it as the Eternal Witness set. Huh.
That's true. Eternal Witness was huge.
Yeah. But as far as summing up the set, yeah, I went with the Joiner Adept because it's the best way to do it. So yay, we're done with Meriden. Meriden sucked.
Yeah.
I liked it at the time. Then I didn't like it so much. Now what?
I think it's easy to look back now and go, oh, you know. I think at the time it was reasonably enjoyable. Kind of like people look back and they're like, man, Kamigawa was terrible because it didn't have crazy stuff or whatever. And I found Kamigawa, especially Kamigawa Limited, to be thoroughly enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to go into that?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Well, then I will pick up the pace.
Yes. Champions of Kamigawa had Bushido, Samurai. It had flip cards for the first time. All the rare creatures were legendary. The arcane subtype.
Or even legendary uncommon creatures.
Yeah, but all of the rare creatures
were
legendary, which was a large pain in the parts. The arcane subtype on spirits on bless you.
Oh, couldn't mute it fast
enough. Instants and sorceries. And thus the spirit craft thing, soul shift, all that. Hondens, the cycle of Hondens were in there. The Myogen, which had the indestructibility counter. And the legendary dragons, Kakusho, Kaga, all those. So somebody talk, I have to answer this phone call.
So my pick is definitely Glacial Ray. It isn't a very splashy card. It's a common. But again, like some of the others I mentioned, I think it sums up what's going on pretty well. It is an arcane spell, so it's a spell associated with the spirit world. Ooh, and it also had Splice. So basically, for one and a red, this is an instant, and it deals 2 damage to target creature or player. Very simple, very basic burn spell. However, also has Splice onto Arcane of 1 in a red, which means when you play another, when you cast another Arcane spell, at the time you're casting it, you cannot wait to see if anybody counters it and then Splice or whatever, but at the time you're announcing the spell, you also pay any splice cost for any other arcane spells in your hand that have splice onto arcane. And then you can add the text of that card to the spell you're casting. I know it sounds a little weird. You're casting one arcane spell and then you're adding the text of this spell to that spell. Which means, first of all, this spell, the Glacial Ray, stays in your hand, so you can cast it later or splice onto some other arcane spell. But also it means it's now you've got one mega spell, and if that mega spell is countered, then you don't get to do any of that stuff. But I like what it does. I've liked it. I've used it in a couple different decks, and it's clean, it's straightforward, and it really shows you what splicing can do. And splicing is a really interesting concept because it really emphasizes card quality and card advantage and holding onto the stuff in your hand. Anybody else got anything to say about that?
Nope.
Okay. And then I guess Chewie's still on the phone. Dark, what is your card for Champions of Kamigawa?
Mine actually, I believe, has been, well, there's a lot of really cool choices. I think I'm gonna have to do the whole straight up and, I don't know, the best word for it. Mine's gonna be Kakusho.
Oh, I'm basically just no other way to really put it, the best card.
Yeah. Because Kakusho was just the five draft really neat. It went with the whole Oriental style that the whole block was. And, of course, if you've got, like, an Oriental style, you have to have dragons in it. And
work phone calls while recording. What'd I miss?
The world ended.
Again? Son of a whore.
I covered Glacial Ray for my card.
I was going to do that one.
And then I covered Kakusho.
It's Kakusho. And Dirk really just got started.
So,
is there anything I should add about Glacial Ray? I don't know. Just the ability to splice Glacial Ray is completely ridiculous, and I hate it. And I love it.
It's a hate-love, love-hate relationship.
Lava Spike with a Glacial Ray in hand is just bad. Okay, I'm done. Keep going.
Kakusho is the black dragon of the five colored dragons and everything. And each one has some sort of... Because there's five dragons, apparently five is the theme in terms of all the craziness that goes on. Like, the red one does five damage whenever it gets killed. And Kakusho drains five life from opponents.
Each opponent.
And do what?
Each opponent.
Each opponent. And then the owner of Kakusho gains however much life.
Yeah.
Thus this making the dragon in a multiplayer game broken.
A little bit. This was the one that the Dragonstorm deck ran on, the first version of the Dragonstorm deck. It would tutor up four Kakushos, and because they're all legendary, they'd all die, which would deal 20 damage to your... Well, your opponent would lose 20 life, and you'd gain 20 life, and hopefully that was the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. And even if you didn't have Dragonstorm, just running this guy out and going, like, kill him, please. Yeah. That 5-point swing is huge. It's a 10-point
swing. It's a 10-point swing in a duel.
In a duel. But again, for multiplayer, and I'm glad that they make cards that acknowledge multiplayer, but this is absurdly powerful. It's more like they're like, well, we're just going to make this apply to everybody, and that way it's multiplayer. Well.
Oh, yeah. If this said target opponent, then we wouldn't have cared so much.
No. We would have been like, oh, look, it's another good card. Okay. But I had a couple Kakushos. I've since traded them away, but just the ability to go Kakusho, and people are like, well, I'm not going to kill it. So I'm like, all right, Kakusho. He sees himself. And it's a like mega ultra super siphon soul.
And actually, go ahead.
And so in case you haven't been able to tell from some of our previous episodes, Siphon Soul is a card that gets played a lot in our group because it's just wonderful
great.
For multiplayer.
And because it's legendary, they changed the legend rule for Kamigawa Block. I completely forgot
correct.
About this.
That was right before Kamigawa Block.
It used to be – well, it was for Kamigawa Block.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
It used to be – actually, I think it was for a Chroma was why they changed it. They didn't want it to be a race to see who got the Achroma out first.
Well, that was one of the things they talked about.
Yeah.
But it didn't go into effect until Kamigawa.
Right. The legend rule used to be if there was a legend in play and someone played another one, then the new one died immediately. And the original one laughed. But they changed the legend rule to where, in my mind, it's more fair and makes a little bit more sense that if I have summoned Achroma over here, and then Brian over there tries to summon Achroma.
So he has a coughing fit.
And then they choke and die. Then Achroma appears on his side of the battlefield, and Achroma can't be in two places at once. So essentially what's happened is she's being ripped apart trying to be summoned by both players, and both copies die. That was how I always flavorfully rationalized it is, you know, you can't have me here and me over there. That means that I'm both here and there, which means I've been ripped apart, which means I die in both places, which I always liked. So they changed it instead of the new one dying to where both of them would die immediately, which made things a lot more fair and allowed Kakusho to be a lot less fair.
Yes.
There we go. That's all I wanted.
Next.
Are we next?
Yep.
Ryan, mm-hmm. you done?
Yeah.
All right. Mike went with Gifts Ungiven.
Wow, I forgot about Gifts Ungiven. How did I forget about Gifts Ungiven?
I don't know. Again, it is still being played and extended. Crap. One of the combo decks especially is running it, but for some reason my brain has just farted, and I can't remember which combo deck in extended is actually running Gifts Ungiven, like, as a main part. It's not the Hypergenesis deck. Oh, well, it'll come to me later. Gifts Ungiven says, it does not say hiccup. Search your library for four cards with different names and reveal them. Target opponent chooses two of those cards, put the chosen cards in your graveyard and the rest in your hand, then shuffle your library. And the whole point is to choose four cards that are basically redundant to keep your whole mess going. Brian, what were the four cards in, was it your deck or Mike's deck?
It was Mike's deck.
It's like a Hanakami and the Arcane Raise Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And two others that aren't following me here. Not that it matters.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole point is to pick out four cards to where no matter what they give you, they're not in a good spot.
Right. It's basically, what was that old card, Intuition?
No. I don't think that's right. Is that right?
Here at the Mana Pool, we are always prepared.
Yes. Search your library for any three cards and reveal them. Target opponent chooses one. Put that into your hand and the rest in your graveyard. Yes.
Now, Gifts Ungiven was actually an attempt. They actually said cards with different names, because what a lot of people would do with Intuition is go, I'll go get three copies of
whatever
card I need.
Yeah. Ooh. So, Mike's notes here are, a set remembered most for things that had little if anything to do with its major themes or the ways it was intended to interact with the blocks before and after it. And it's true. Champions is mostly remembered for cards like this, not so much for the cards that were in it. I mean, what else was big? Freaking the top. Maloku, the Clouded Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
What has that got to do with the major themes in the set? Nothing! Yes. But, yeah. That's pretty much that.
Yep.
How about you?
You guys already took all of mine. You guys suck. I will go with... Let me pull it up.
Go with Kondo.
He was on my list, but I decided against him because he's dumb.
Yeah, he was the best Bushido guy I saw. So
yeah, I wasn't gonna do anything with Bushido. How about the Juicy Apprentice, which is a card I desperately hated.
So juicy.
Juicy Apprentice for one and a blue was a 1/2 human wizard. Two and a blue. Draw a card. If you have nine or more cards in hand, flip Juicy Apprentice. What? So, you flip Juicy Apprentice, and he becomes Tamoya the Revealer. Legendary creature, human wizard. For three and two blue and tap, target player draws X cards, where X is the number of cards in your hand. So, yeah, I mean... The Apprentice studies hard enough, gets you nine more cards in hand, whoop, and it flips into this ridiculously stupid card drawing machine. I hated this thing, but it actually showed off the flip cards and the whole legendary thing, because it becomes legendary, so if someone else manages to flip their Juicy Apprentice too, they both die. And as far as the blue-white control decks around at the time, this thing was everywhere, and I hated it, but it's such a good card. Yay!
So Betrayers.
So Betrayed. Betrayers had ninjas.
Yes.
With ninjutsu, which was cool. I'm attacking with a guy. I don't block. Oh, it's not the guy you think it is. Cloud of Smoke. It's a ninja.
It's Batman. No, wait.
It had more splicing and we start to see alternate splicing costs.
Yeah, the like patrons.
Patrons.
Which nobody cares about. Except for me and my one patron of the Nozomi and my graveyard deck.
My patron of the Soratami came in quite handy in a triple betrayers draft.
Yeah, I bet it did. And the shoals, which made a big impact for a minute.
Yeah, people are like, holy crap, the blue one's force of will. Well, not really.
Yeah, not really.
But the white one, yeah, Shining Shoal was actually pretty interesting. Sickening Shoal was just... It made me ill to look at it when I realized what it was. I was like, it's fish puking on a guy. It's kind of disturbing to look at it. Maybe not so much. Maybe I become jaded after Rakdos and all that good stuff. But wow. I was like, whoa. So my pick, let me make sure I'm pronouncing this as correctly as possible, is Higure. The Still Wind.
Everybody's stealing mine.
He is the Master Ninja. He was the rare blue one. Ninjas were only in blue and black, and black had its own rare ninja, which was incredibly awesome. But this one actually, whenever it dealt damage to a player or combat damage to a player, you could tutor up another ninja from your deck. And he's really what made the ninjas go, well, he definitely made a lot of the ninja decks go and run smoothly and enabled their ninja-ness, because then you could swap out other ninjas for the ninjas in your hand or other unblocked creatures. So, and because ninjutsu was such a huge part of the set and the identity of the set, this guy was a clear choice for me. So,
oh, yeah.
Again,
I mean, yeah. Betrayers is known for, oh, that was the ninja set.
Yeah.
And Higuri was the ninja badass.
The ninja ninja.
He was essentially the ninja lord, even though he doesn't give him any bonuses to power and toughness.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what you got, Zerk?
My choice was Mirror Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
No, it's perfect.
Well, I chose Mirror Gallery because really the whole champion block, the whole Kamigawa block, was essentially a Legends block. And so, you know, all the cool ones, you could only have like one copy of because it was legendary. Well, Mirror Gallery made it so that the legend rule didn't apply. So you could have four copies of Kakusho. You could have four copies of whoever you wanted on the board, and they stayed. So
Yamazaki,
is that right?
Yeah,
the brothers Yamazaki. Yeah, they got ridiculous when you had all four of them out.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's funny that there were so many cards that had the legend rule on the card. That's just great.
Yeah, that was the one thing that was just such a pain in the butt with that set is that, you know, usually it's like, you know, the whole set is geared around one legendary character. You know, this one legendary character is so awesome. Like,
or a small
about
handful of legendary characters.
Yeah, and here, like, this block just
everybody
spoiled it.
Like, you're a legend, you're a legend. No one's heard of you, but you're a legend. I'm like, no, he's not. He's a chump. Who is that moron who could let you play a samurai from your hand with colorless mana? What a tool.
Oh, yeah.
Kentaro.
I remember him.
The smiling cat. What a smiling turd.
His face did make me want to punch him. Good thing for his sake he was a piece of plastic. Or cardboard.
Or whatever. So Mike went with the Kodama of the Center Tree.
Okay.
And to be honest, I don't remember the Kodama of the Center. I remember the North and South.
The Kodama of the Center Tree, I remember, costs 4 and a green. He has power and toughness equal to the number of spirits you control.
And Soul Shift X.
And Soul Shift equal to the number of, what, spirits you control as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Soul Shift was, when this is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, you may return target spirit card with converted mana cost of whatever the Soul Shift number or less from your graveyard to your hand.
So the bigger the number, the more...
The greater chances you got, or choices you got.
Right. Still only one card.
Yeah. But what did Mike say about this? Block notes. The same material as Champions Amplified, which is exactly what the Kodama of the Center Tree is. It takes the whole Spiritcraft thing and, you know, jumps it up to X. Hey. I guess I have to go with the obvious one, don't I?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the obvious one is, don't you?
No.
Ryan does.
Ink Eyes?
What? Hey, dummy. Umezawa's Jete.
Okay. Woo-hoo! I didn't really feel that. It's an incredibly powerful It's an incredibly powerful card. I didn't know. I thought about it. I'm like, I don't really know what this represents about the set. So I kind of left it alone. But
you guys
all
got,
that you explain.
You guys got all the ones that I wanted. And it was third on Mike's list. So. It's a legendary artifact equipment. It costs 2, it equips for 2. When a crypt creature deals combat damage, put 2 charge counters on the Jete. You remove a charge counter from it, choose 1. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, or target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn, or you gain 2 life. Somebody said this was the first Planeswalker. I think, did they say that on the last show? Or did I hear that somewhere else? I think I heard that on a different podcast, actually.
I never thought of that before, but it actually makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, they said this was the first Planeswalker, and it, I mean, it's got 3 abilities, and it removes counters to do it. Hey, why not? But other than ninjas, this was what the set was about. I mean, everybody that opened Betrayers wanted a freaking Jitty, as people have come to call it. Everybody wants a Jitty. Everybody wanted a Jitty. I have 2, and I'm lucky to have them.
Oh, yeah.
Jitty, Jitty.
Jitty, Jitty. Ah, Jitty, Jitty. But, yeah, that's all there is, man. It's the Jitty. I mean, what else can you say? It's the most feared equipment known to man. It still sees play in Extended, for God's sake. And it's an equipment. They cost 4 to go to use, 4 and a swing, and yet there it is, and people still crap themselves when they see it. But most of the set kind of sucks, I'll give you that. The ninjas are cool. There's a few nifty Spiritcraft things, Robo's Whisper and all that, but really it's all about the Jitty. That's why it summed up the set for me. All right, the last one is... What is it about the third set in the block sucking?
You know, I think I used to approach it with the thought that, oh, the third one's going to be great. They're going to do all this crazy powerful stuff coming off of, like, Apocalypse and stuff like that, that they know that it's going to be in Standard the least amount of time, but the off-the-wall stuff generally just doesn't lend itself very well to playing.
Yeah, Saviors brought us Wisdom, as it came to be known, which is a number of cards in hand matters.
Although Wisdom was not wise.
No. Now, admittedly, okay, the things that were in the set. Sweep, the ability word Sweep, which you returned lands of a certain type to, or else the spell had no effect. Like Barrel Down Sukinzan was, it dealt damage equal to twice the number of mountains you returned to your hand. It had the Kirin cycle of creatures, the new Morrows, which were actually pretty awesome, and the epic spells that Dirk loves so much. All of those came from Saviors. But really, yeah, Saviors kind of sucked. And really, lots of the mechanics and whatnot in building up to Kamigawa lend themselves well to the whole Wisdom thing. With Splice, you got to play a spell.
I talked about that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you got the splice while keeping the card in your hand. You got the effect of the spell with it, leaving it in your hand. Soul Shift brought a creature back to your hand. Ninjas bounced a creature into play into your hand. Was there something else? That was pretty much it, wasn't it?
It's Soul Shift. Yeah.
But I mean, all of those basically had an effect of putting cards in your hand or getting an effect without losing a card from your hand. And they were doing this, and they said, hey, look, all these things have this in common. Let's make that the theme of a set. So, hey, dummies. So, yeah, that's Saviors. What have you got for Saviors, the Brian?
For Saviors, I have Masumaro, First to Live. He's out of that Maru cycle.
Now, which one was he? The white one?
He was the green one.
Green one, yeah. The Super Maru.
He's the Super Maru bro. Remember, Maru only costs 4. This guy costs 6 and is a legendary spirit. But his power and toughness are each equal to twice the number of cards in your hand. So if you have one card in hand, he's a bear. He's a 2-2. Two cards in hand, 4-4, etc., etc. Basically, if you've got a decent amount of cards in hand, say 4 or 5, he's
stupid.
He's stupid. And then once you start to exceed the maximum number of cards you can usually have in your hand, especially during your turn, at least, even without any tricks, just drawing extra cards, it's just silly. And I thought that he represented the wisdom mechanic well and kind of what they were going for, and he's a spirit. So I don't really have a whole lot else to say. He's really straightforward, but he's just huge. And he's so into wisdom. He's wise, I guess.
Yes.
That's really it. Dark.
I actually really liked this set because it fed into a lot of the things that I thought was kind of cool, like the things I was working on. I think what really got me was that it just had a couple mechanics that I'd liked, and I saw the endless or the epic spells and was like, I need to build, that's awesome properties, I want to do something with them.
For the record, Dirk puts at least one copy of Honden of Seeing Winds in every deck that has blue in it ever.
Yeah, the Hondens were awesome.
Dirk is all about drawing extra cards. If it's got blue in it, it's got a Honden in it. If it doesn't, it's because he ran out and he forgot to get another one.
No, it's true. He is all about the Honden of the Seeing Winds.
Yeah. The one that I thought, though, that's... You know, with the whole flip mechanic was Himaru, Human Ascendant.
Ooh, I like him.
He's definitely a fun one. He's still, like, the flip mechanic was, again, and has been said, was, you know, you have this card in this normal phase, and then with a mana cost at the top, and you put it down and it has certain properties or abilities, but when you reached a certain amount, you flipped it and some other really wacky stuff happened. For him, isn't it when he dies?
Yeah, he's a Homura is a 4/4 human monk that can't block, and that's his ability. He's a 4/4 that can't block for 6, and when he's put into a graveyard from play, you return it to play flipped. He's Homura's essence,
and he is something else.
It's completely ridiculous. Creatures you control get +2/+2 and have flying and a fire breathing. Red, pay a red, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn. So it turns all of your creatures into little Shivans. Yay. I have one of these guys in my Chuck deck because just in case I get him into play, I can Chuck him and make all my other creatures bigger. What the heck?
It's just so funny that he's a monk and he's like, I refuse to defend myself, but as soon as he dies, he's like, okay, we're going to conquer the world and burn it to shreds.
He's like, look, guys, I ascended. We're all dragons now. And everyone's like, yay, I'm a dragon. Ah! You know.
That's actually really good.
So he was – these guys, all the flip cards in Saviors, when they flipped, they turned into an enchantment with some sort of ridiculous effect. I used to play with Kuon, the Ogre Ascendant, in my graveyard deck. When he flips, everybody has to sack a creature during their upkeep. I mean, that's ridiculous. What was that? Everybody okay over there?
I'm good.
I'm good.
Oh, okay. But I have to go with Dirk on this. I really like Humira. And of all the Ascendants, he
was the best one.
He's the one I use.
I kept getting copies of the green one. I have yet to...
Let's see here. Arayo...
The green one requires you to have a land. You can show your hand at any time, and then if your hand has at least 7 lands in it, she flips, and then your mana kind of like goes like crazy. She's like the best mana accelerant literally in the game. Your lands essentially have coat of arms.
Yeah, whenever a land you control is tapped for mana, for each other land you control with the same name, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. So if you had 5 forests and you tapped 1 forest, you got 6. For each other land, you got 5.
Oh, that's true.
Total.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
From one. There's not. But to flip, you have to have what, 7?
Yeah. 7 or more land cards in hand.
7 or more, yeah.
And like and the white one flipped into prevent all damage that would be dealt to creatures you control.
That one I like.
Well, you had to have 30 or more life to flip it, but that's not so hard.
Combo corner of the day. My combos were actually on my computer that has since been wiped, so I've actually lost them. But actually the one I was going to mention, knowing that we could be going into this, was... Runetail, Kitsune Ascendant, and Felidar Sovereign.
Huh. Make your Sovereign harder to kill while almost winning the game.
Get up to 30, play the Runetail, have it flip automatically, then play the Felidar, and it won't die, essentially.
Well, from damage.
From damage.
Yeah.
And it's got lifelink, so from there on out, shouldn't be that hard.
Nice.
Simple, straightforward, tied into exactly what we were talking about, and now we can keep moving.
Yes, we can. Mike's is weird. It's Scroll of Origins.
I remember Scroll of Origins.
Which is a rare artifact. It costs 2. And for 2 and tap, draw a card if you have 7 or more cards in hand. So it's the an artifact version of Library of Alexandria, sort of, kind of. And Mike's note was, where'd it go? It's full of effects power. The set itself is full of effects powered by Wisdom. Most are pretty decent. Then he points out that it was actually supported well by the rest of the block, but that fact was way too subtle for many people to catch. The way that Splice and Ninjutsu and Soul Shift worked into it, like we explained already, lots of people didn't catch that. To them, it came from completely out of left field, at least. There was sort of a kind of a connection if you looked at it real hard and squinted and cocked your head to the side. So, yay, it still came out of left field, but, you know, at least there was support for it, is what he's saying. But, yeah, the Scroll of Origins, I don't know. I probably would have picked the green dude who gets bigger if you have 7 or more cards in hand. But I can't remember what he was. Oh, well. So, yeah, for mine, I went again with a card that was sort of centered on the whole Wisdom thing and was a tournament staple for quite a while. You know what it is, Brian?
Center of the Sea?
No.
Doesn't ring a bell, but continue.
Oh, you're going to hate yourself when I tell you.
I'm sure.
The Ebony Owl Natsuke.
Oh, man.
Been a long time, man.
Shouldn't have left without a deck.
Owling Mine.
Owling Mine.
It was such a great deck, too, and it was such a one-hit wonder.
For like, 2 mana, Ebony Owl Natsuki is an artifact that was an uncommon. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if that player has 7 or more cards in hand, Ebony Owl Natsuki deals 4 damage to him or her. Easy peasy. The deck was built around playing a boomerang on turn 2 and never stopping.
Mm-hmm.
What was the counterspell that made you draw a card? Vex? Yeah. Was that later? That was later.
No, that was a Mirrodin.
Oh, okay, yeah. It played Howling Minds. It played Kami the False Moon on some case. Kami the Full Moon. What was it called?
Kami of the
Crescent Moon. There we go.
Which is another Howling Mind. Think about how much Font of Mythos was wanted in that deck but didn't exist yet.
Yeah. Like I said, the whole idea was to play Boomerang on turn 2 to bounce a land and just keep on at it. Play the Natsuki. We'll preferably play the Natsuki on turn 2 and start bouncing things on turn 3, but, you know, whatever. And it just, you just took 4 every turn. You play something, no, counter that. Oh, draw a card while you're at it. Ah! And it was just sick. And it showcases the wisdom thing. It's sort of a inverted wisdom thing where you want your opponents to have the whole wisdom thing going.
You're wise, nerd.
You wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, would you? Well, yes, I would actually stab him in the head with glasses. So yeah, that was pretty much that. I actually tried to build a multiplayer version of the Owling Mine that kind of worked, but not really. Anybody?
Bueller.
I'm going to take advantage of this extended silence and...
I put my pants back on.
It's about time. You've been distracting me. So, that is our boiling entire sets down to 1 card. Well, 4 cards as the case may be. We actually, all of us but Brian actually had backups just in case the one we picked got said.
I had some. I didn't have formal backup, but I had... If one of mine had been taken for whatever reason, then I could quickly pull out another one.
Word. But that was just so we had more things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only one of Mike's that wasn't his first pick was the Aether Vial, because you took Ravager.
Yeah.
Everything else that Mike did was his first pick. So that's cool. So, I guess, thank you very much, Sundershriek. I'm sure this will be something we come back to and do some older sets or some the other sets since we've been playing. We've got Ravnica and Time Spiral to do. So I'm sure this will be something we come back to at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, mm-hmm. Final thoughts, Mike? Thank you, Mike. Final thoughts, Brian?
I'm so glad to be done with finals. A little bit of personal life here. It's just I've tried not to let it get in the way of what we're doing here at the Mana Pool and bring it to you. And I appreciate the other hosts for working around my somewhat erratic schedule, but it's been good to be able to be here. And one more semester down and a couple class – one class in January and then on to spring semester and then – whew. Yeah. So, but it's been a bit of a challenge lately, but, you know, still love Magic. It's still a passion. So I'm glad. I'm very thankful to have the opportunity to discuss something I really enjoy with all of you people. So, glad to be here.
Yay.
That's
how about you, Zerk?
It's been kind of cool going back to the different blocks and everything, but I will also point out that it has brought back horrid memories as well of sitting there thinking, this was such a dumb block.
Once you open Pandora's box, my friend, you may not be able to close it.
Yeah, there were definitely good, there were some good blocks, you know, it was kind of cool to get out of some of these blocks and get into something new. And then there were just times where it was like, what?
What?
What is this? Where did they come up with this from?
Didn't you know we were doing that the whole time?
Yeah.
And as far as me, yeah. Thank you guys very much out there for continuing to give us show ideas and whatnot, because sometimes, like right now, at this ridiculous busy time of year for everybody, finals, and, you know, I'm worried about not having a job very soon, and there's that whole holiday thing that unfortunately sucks all the money out of all of us. There's all kinds of stuff going on for all of us. Dark's got wrestling coach and scouts and all that craziness. And we're all really, really busy, and sometimes we just, what do you guys want to talk about? I don't know. You got anything? Nope. You guys got anything? Nope. I don't have anything. So I refer to the forums. I'm like, oh, this looks great. Let's do this.
We have to do a Blowing Up the World episode.
I know, right? I mean, how great is that? We have to figure out how to do a Blowing Up the World episode. But we are going to have to do one.
I'll call Dr. Evil.
Watch out. I hear he charges an exorbitant fee. All of $1 million. What? I mean, $100 billion.
Yeah, I don't have that lying around.
Yeah, I don't even have, like...
Maybe I'll just call,
Mike?
Skeletor, that's his name. It took me a minute.
Oh, she works for the temp agency I work for. Man, every time she shows up, I'm like, Skeletor, because she's kind of creepy looking. Anyway, let's hope that just doesn't, right. Let's hope that doesn't get out there. She shows up to bring the checks, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? All right, see you later. Oh, my God, He-Man's in trouble. But dude, seriously, I just want to feed her. I'm like, won't you come to lunch with us? I'll buy you a burger. Eat the whole burger. Have some fries. Put some ketchup on the fries. For God's sake, eat something. Anyway. Hi. How are you, guys?
Cardshark.com.
Send us an email. That's awesome. You know something I didn't... Oh, look out. Something I didn't tell you guys. When I met Phil,
mm-hmm.
He hopped in the car and he was taking me. I was like, where are we going to go? He's like, let's go to Subway. I said, all right. That's awesome. And he goes, yes. Apparently that's a thing. That would be like meeting Steve Austin and him going, because Stone Cold said so. You're like, woo! Apparently that's what that was. I felt vaguely.
And then he found $5.
Shut up. No, I mean, I felt vaguely, I don't know, I felt a touch of fame when I said that, and he was like, ha! You know, like it was my catchphrase or something.
It is your catchphrase.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't think of it as my catchphrase. That's just how
repeat
I talk.
Repeat after me. Your sister's hot.
Yes, she is. So do I have a list of catchphrases? Listeners, send me this list of catchphrases.
Send us an email of all of our catchphrases, yes, and whose catchphrase it is.
Yes, what are these catchphrases? Because I want to know what people think are my catchphrases, and do the other guys have catchphrases? I don't think this way.
I'm actually kind of curious now myself. I'm like, Brian's catchphrase is, wonk, 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 wonk,
I have too many catchphrases. I have too many catchphrases.
Dirk never says the same thing twice, because Dirk sits there for an hour and a half and doesn't say anything. And then he does say something, and it's freaking brilliant or hilarious or both.
Mike's catchphrase just might be,
But the best part was Mike... For the longest time, the best thing about Mike was not that he, not anything he said, but it was his counting on his fingers. That was epic. That was the most epic thing ever.
And that doesn't
especially
really come across when he's, in a non-visual.
When he loses count and he shakes his hand.
And he would always.
And he's like, okay, I gotta start all over.
He would always do that weird thumb thing where, you know, he would start in the wrong place for me. Like, he'd start with a thumb at one, and I'm like, that's not one. Anyway. Okay, now we're just silly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, seriously, send us a list of what you guys think our catchphrases are, because now I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right, then. So this has been episode 110 of the Mana Pool. And, yeah. Hey, this was fun. Derek, I'm glad we decided to have you over instead of Mike.
I appreciate
that. I was getting
that.
Sick of Mike. Poor Mike. Mike sucks. Oh, I found out my popularity.
Mike lost the coin flip.
Popularity contest equals not Mike. I found out why Mike actually wasn't able to join us. I forgot. He's moving out of his apartment as we speak.
That's right.
Woo-hoo. He's like, Mom is here and we're working on stuff for the move. I was like, why's your mom? Oh, yeah! Tell your mom I said hi. Smiley face. Okay. Oh, and for anybody who's been listening for a while and is at all interested in Swift, you should totally go to Swift's website. It's www.swift-band.com. They have a new song, which is pretty good. It's called, I think it was Forest of Death. I don't have it up at the moment. And they also have information about, okay, well, in 2 days, I'm going to the Swift 10-year reunion show. Oh, my God, I can't wait. And Thomas is going to go with me, which is awesome. And they actually have a deal where you can – one of the guys has remastered all of their tracks, and you can get them for relatively cheap for a limited time only. And hopefully soon they'll be in iTunes and all that. So it'll be most excellent, so you should totally check it out. It's on swift-band.com, swiftband.com. And that's my shameless plug. They let me use their music, and they are by far my favorite, you know, regional band who is no longer around, sadly. So, yeah. Anyway, I think we've been at this long enough, so I'm going to call this episode In the Can. Right, guys?
Yeah.
Shut up. So, hot sister. Awesome. What? I hate you guys. Do I have any other catchphrases? Awesome. I did that one. Send us an email. Anyway. Oh, yeah. And my favorite catchphrase, it's in every episode. Thank you all very much for listening, and go play some magic. So, what's your idea, B?
Oh, okay.
Yes.
My idea was, it's very simple, and I really don't have any time, I really don't have any constraints on it at all. It's just every one of us talks like we're a girl from the valley. Just think back to Clueless. I never saw Clueless, but, you know.
You never saw Clueless?
I somehow escaped.
Oh,
I don't,
man.
I heard
Clueless
it was okay.
Was awesome.
Yeah, I don't mean to make it sound like it's just I never saw it.
Hmm. I don't know. It's possible.
Didn't that have Alicia Silverstone in it?
Yeah, it did. Like to ask her if this cloth smells like chloroform. Well, back then, anyway. Now she's kind of scary. Okay. Well, like, what would we talk about?
Magic, but
that's brilliant.
So we'll talk about magic cards, kind of like girls in the valley talk about boys, right?
Yes.
Oh, see, now that's good.
Yes. Have you guys seen Core Lash? OMG.